The date is Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. The time is 11:04 a.m. This is a hearing of the District of Columbia Rental Housing Commission. Location is the hearing room in Suite 1140BN, 441 4th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. We're here pursuant to D.C. Law 6-10, the Rental Housing Act of 1985 as amended. I'm Chairman Peter Segedy-Mazak, and I'll serve today to chair this hearing. With me today, on my right, is Diana Harris Epps, and on my left, Michael Spencer. We have an appeal this morning in regards to the housing accommodations located at 300 Aspen Street Northwest, Unit 201. The case number is RHTP 1530666. The appeal is styled Evie Amaryllis Isles, Tenant Appellant versus Butternut Whittier Associates LLC, Housing Provider Appellee. The commission notes that there are parties seated before it and would ask that you identify yourselves for the record, beginning with the Tenant Appellant.
Evie Amaryllis Isles.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Carol Blumenthal, and I represent the respondent.
Thank you, Ms. Blumenthal. Thank you, Ms. Isles. I'd like to briefly explain our procedures. Our rules are largely similar to those of the D.C. Court of Appeals. Each party will have 20 minutes to present its case, beginning with the tenant appellant. The tenant appellant may reserve up to 5 minutes of your 20 minutes for rebuttal following the presentation of the case to the housing provider appellee. The housing provider appellee must present all of your arguments within the 20-minute time frame and will have no rebuttal time. In our discretion, we may allow additional time for argument to a party in the event that we engage in questions that occupy a substantial portion of your time. The Commission's hearing will be recorded on audio CD. Our decision will be issued in writing and sent to the parties in the next 30 to 45 days. In this proceeding, the Commission does not request nor will it accept post-hearing submissions from either party. Please turn off any cell phones or other electronic equipment. I'd now like to ask the parties whether they believe that settlement negotiations would be an option to settle this case before we begin hearing this appeal. Ms. Isles?
No.
No?
No.
Very good. If one party objects, then we don't go to settlement.
Interesting.
We're not aware of any preliminary matters, and so the tenant appellant may proceed, but before you proceed, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal? You have up to 5 minutes if you'd like.
Yes, I would like to.
How much time would you like to reserve?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay. So you have 15 minutes then to make your argument now, okay?
Okay.
All right. You can begin.
Good morning. I'm here because there have been problems with my housing. I try to have those problems addressed, and they've largely gone ignored, or it's been very difficult to try to get those problems addressed. Those problems in my housing include problems with the heat, problems with the plumbing, and other problems that a housing inspector was validated in the housing inspection. In addition, I pay quite a bit in rent. I pay $1,800 currently. At the time that this happened, I was paying $1,600 per month. Every year, the housing increases by $100. I don't think that amount is a good representation.
I don't want to interrupt you, but if you could, the critical question here on appeal is how you regard the decision of the judge below and why you think the decision may have been wrong, okay? Why the judge made a decision that was not in compliance with the D.C. Rental Housing Act. So we're not here to retry your case, you know.
Okay.
We're here to listen to you tell us why are we here? Why was the judge below wrong in what you claim she was wrong?
Maybe I have this wrong then. I don't know.
In other words, the judge below dismissed your case.
Okay.
She said, you know, I dismiss. You didn't show up. I dismiss your case.
Okay.
Now, the real issue then becomes, why didn't you show up?
Okay.
And was the judge right in dismissing the case if you didn't show up? Do you understand?
Okay.
So let's focus on why the judge may have been wrong in saying, I dismiss this case, okay?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that. As I mentioned, it's really difficult for me to set a date for a hearing. A lot of times I try to work it out with the other party, but the problem is the type of work I do. I work as a contractor. It's hard to project, okay, well, I will be available on this date. At the time that I did not show up, I recently accepted a contract. It's nothing foreseen. It really would have been a bad idea to take a day off because that's how I earn my income. I was prepared to do that. However, I supervise children, and the person I was working with that I co-supervise with, let's say, they had already submitted for a day, but I didn't know until the day, literally that day. So I tried to scramble and try to see, okay, well, what could I do? But with the time, I mean, basically, I found out at about around 2, around 2 o'clock. To get from my workplace, Maryland, to D.C. or to stop what I'm doing and try to make other arrangements, I just, even today, I've been driving around 30 minutes in traffic. Even if I decide, well, let me park and then take the metro here to avoid that, I'm still losing time. So I did my best to try to get through to the court to request an additional another delay, but I could not. I was thinking, as far as getting a request or a letter in writing from a supervisor, if they're available, I can get one, but I can't expect that I would get a request from that supervisor that they will be available. They have meetings, they have other things that are on their schedule. So this, any way that I look at that day that I went to the library, I tried to, you know, get through, get an email through. It was all just a last-minute thing. It was a last-minute decision. And I did need to keep my job. So this is the reason that I always say that I don't work a 9-to-5 schedule. And it is by contract, on a monthly basis. So I could not make a different arrangement.
Did you understand that when you failed to show at the hearing, there was the potential for your case to be dismissed with prejudice?
I don't understand the with prejudice part.
Did you understand that your case could be dismissed by the court because you failed to appear?
I would say that I know that the judge doesn't have to grant my appeal. Not showing up, I have confused this court with L&T court, which I don't know if the rule is the same there, but it's not to say, you know, there's a habit of it, as has been stated, but
in this case, the administrative law judge sent out something called the case management order.
Okay.
It's a long order. That's the piece of paper that you would have received that told you the date of the hearing to begin with. Do you recall receiving that?
No, I don't.
How did you learn of the date of the hearing that you ultimately need to continue?
I'm sorry. I received a single sheet of paper, taped, no envelope. So that's the only, you said a long piece.
So you never received something called a case management order?
I don't know that I received that. I'm sorry.
you never received any directions that instructed you that you needed to file documents called exhibits on certain days?
Right. That I did not know anything about. So I went online to try to find out about the way the hearings go. I didn't get the information from online. I have tried to contact the court at the number that's on any of these papers. At times, I did not get through.
Did you receive the notices about, once you filed this case, did you receive notices about dates?
Yeah, I got the court appearance date, if that's what, yes.
And did you then ultimately receive the order by the judge dismissing your case?
Yes, I received the order of the judge dismissing my case.
And then did you also receive the order of the judge denying your request to kind of reconsider that?
I did receive the denial. Yes.
And did you receive each of the scheduling orders granting your request to like to continue the mediations? Did you receive those in the mail?
I don't think I received something regarding mediations.
Do you recall asking for the mediation to be continued on two different times?
I asked for a new hearing. I don't know that I asked for a new hearing.
Do you recall that mediation was the first thing they asked for you to do, and initially you said you had a work conflict, and then you indicated that you couldn't make the next hearing date? These are dates in July. Do you remember emailing and sending continuance requests?
I emailed, but I didn't know that the other one was a mediation request.
And did you receive responses back from the administrative law court indicating that you had new dates for mediation?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Do you recall receiving some documentation about having a mediation on September the 8th of 2015?
I don't remember it. I'm not saying that, but I don't remember that, unless it was a mediation that I went to a mediation.
How did you know about the date?
I don't know if it's that same mediation is what I'm trying to say. I know I went to a mediation. I don't know if it's the same one.
So you're saying now that you never received a several multi-page document from the court, from the administrative law court, telling you here's the date of the hearing, this is how you file motions, this is the address you should file motions, this is what happens if you don't appear. You never received any information about that.
I'm sorry, but I'm not familiar with the type of document. Do you have a copy of it, or so that I can?
When you filed this case, were you in the midst of your trial before Judge Zeldin in Landlordington?
I had an attorney that at the time. There may have been a document or filings during that time. There was a lot going on that I did file, or they did file, or so.
I think what the judge is really trying to get at is, how did you know the day of the hearing?
In other words,
you should have known because you didn't show up. And you said, hey, I'm sorry, I can't make it. So you must have received something in the mail that said, the hearing date is this, please come to the hearing. Did you get something like that?
I received that.
Did you?
I received the hearing
notice. In that notice, did you read anything that said, if you don't come, we can dismiss your case? Did you ever, in that same thing that you received, did you ever read, oh, if I don't go, I may have my case dismissed? Did you ever know that?
I know that I found out afterwards, or I realized afterwards. So I don't want to say that I didn't know something. I actually thought my appeal would be granted because of the circumstances. Like, I thought that would be granted.
You've been provided,
yes,
by a clerk of a court of a multi-page document. Have you ever seen that before?
Yes, I have.
All right. And you've read that before, is that correct?
Yeah, yes. I remember this paper. There are two papers that I'm positive about, the last one and this one. I think because I received the response and I read through the response of the denial and I saw the reason for the denial.
So have you seen that document? Did you receive it before the hearing or you did not?
I can't say that.
Did you ever tell the judge that?
That what?
That you didn't receive the documents.
No, I never told the judge.
Why didn't you?
I was just trying to request the
appeal. Well, don't you? You see, the problem we have is that the burden is on you. It's on you to say, look, I can't come to the hearing today because I'm so-and-so. The judge below said you never told us what the reasons were. You never gave us, you had 5 days before the hearing to file a witness list and other things. You didn't do that. The day before the hearing, you say, I'm sorry, I can't come. The judge then says, you didn't give us any evidence to support your claim that you couldn't come. So we're going to have to wrap this up soon. So was the judge wrong in making that decision? And if so, why?
I see what you're saying. I did not know the 5-day, I did not know the details, the rules. I know that I had a court date. I can tell you that I received the notice of a court date. I know that I could request an appeal, which is why I requested an appeal of the dismissal, because I knew that I missed the date. The information beyond that is something I know that I was aware of after the date. I did not tell the judge, because of my ignorance, because I did not know, I did not tell the judge that I didn't receive a letter, because the reason I was applying for the or requesting it had to do with the reason I could not come. So it had to do with the reasons that didn't allow me to come. So it didn't have to do with whether or not for me, in my request, it had nothing to do with whether or not.
I'm just going to stop you.
Yes.
You indicated you accepted a new contract, correct?
Yes.
And you started your new job, correct?
Yes.
All right. And do you recall when you accepted the new contract?
In October, I think it was, October.
Okay. And upon accepting the new contract, were you already aware of the date? Hearing?
1 to 2 weeks. So I plan to go.
All right.
To the hearing.
And when you planned to go, when you accepted the new contract, did you take the time to ask for that day off then?
I had already told them that I would not be, I told not them, I told the one teacher that I would not, I needed that day. I told her like the day before. Can I turn on my electronic device to look at the calendar? No.
No.
Okay.
No, just I tell you what, we understand what you're saying, and our time is up now. So you're going to have 5 minutes after the landlord presents her case to respond to what the landlord said. But our major issue that you have to show us. Is that the judge was wrong down below in dismissing your case because the judge failed in some way to honor information that you provided that you couldn't be there and that you somehow were unaware of all of the requirements that the court placed on you to provide that information. So right now, I'm going to let the landlord give her argument, and then you'll have 5 minutes after the landlord's argument to respond to it, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Blumenthal.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Ms. Blumenthal, I just have a question off the top, if I might ask. The Drayton stay?
Yes.
What's the case in Superior Court? Is it basically the same thing as being litigated below, or is it the same kinds of claims?
Yes, the housing code violations are a defense, and we had 2 days of trial.
Okay.
Was it
illegal rent increases, or is the action an eviction action, or what kind of action is it in Superior Court?
It is an eviction action. All actions in landlord-tenant court
are eviction actions.
So let me ask you this.
If this case were tried in Superior Court, would it have been res judicata on the issues presented in this tenant petition? I'm just asking to see if there is some place that the tenant has to air all of the grievances, all of the claims in her tenant petition, or if those might be repetitive of what she's claiming in Superior Court, so that there is some forum for any of these. That's all.
I appreciate that question, Commissioner, and I'm going to answer that in my role as officer of a court.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you my honest answer to that.
Sure.
Well, not that I would ever give you a dishonest
Understood.
Answer.
Understood. No, you never have.
To
no.
Say is.
No.
My position would be that, yes, a full hearing in the Superior Court will be dispositive of the issues here. However, there is a counter argument to that, and that's why I say when I want to answer as officer of the court, because I don't want to mislead or leave a wrong impression. In her filing, in the tenant petition, she has challenged that there were not proper, among other charges. The reduced services is clearly covered by the Superior Court action. Not insubstantial with compliance with the housing code is clearly before the landlord-tenant division. But she did also claim that there was no correct filing of forms with RAD. I'm trying to get my initials right these days. That part of her pleading would not be covered in Superior Court. Now, as to the rent increases, because of the nature of the landlord's defense, in addition to being a tenant, Ms. Isles has also, and I believe she the documents are in the record there. They certainly were submitted as part of our exhibits. Ms. Isles has also signed a purchase agreement for the document. So while rent increases for rent-controlled buildings are fully within the purview of this agency and the OAH, and not, as we know, the primary jurisdiction of this agency, in this case, the defense to that from the landlord's point of view is that it has to do with the sales aspect of the sales contract and amounts of money that are paid in connection with that sales contract. And those are matters that are fully before the Superior Court and may be litigated there. So that is why it would be my position that all matters would be litigated in Superior Court.
Am I understanding this right, ma'am? Is it a rent option to buy so that the rental payments would then go to some kind of down payment for the property itself?
Is there an addendum to the lease?
So in other words, any increase in rent would then be an increase that would then go to pay to increase whatever the down payment is for the purchase price for the property, if it's a rent option to buy, right? Something like that?
I don't have in my head
Understood. Exactly. Okay. The
details, but the $100 a year that Ms. Isles was referring to is $100 that's in connection with this sales aspect of the lease.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
But there is that.
Understood.
Provision. What I would like to say to the commission, and which I know that you are all aware of, but the rules of the tribunal are rules that try to embody due process for all parties, for both parties. And they should apply to all parties, whether or not any of the parties are pro se. Now, the history of this case is a case of consistent delay, and there has been delay in the Superior Court, there has been delay in this particular case. Ms. Isles filed the case and sought two continuances. Once a date was set, she sought a continuance, it was granted, and she sought another continuance, and it was granted. Now, consider as well that each of these continuances is always put in at the last moment. In the first two continuances, she filed at close of business 447, 450, 445 on a Friday when there was a hearing set for the following Tuesday. If she mails a copy to the respondent, she does so after she files, and so there is no real opportunity for the respondent to have any timely notice. And, of course, the respondent has to prepare for the hearing and be prepared to go forward. We have, and the reasons that are given for these, and the first reason for the first continuance was training, and that 9:30 does not allow Ms. Isles sufficient time, travel time, to get to the hearing. So that was granted. The second continuance was granted, and again, it was not filed until the Friday night before the Tuesday hearing date, saying that she wanted to obtain an attorney. And Ms. Isles mentioned to you in her presentation, she had an attorney in Superior Court. She's had the advice of legal counsel. This request for a second continuance was 2.5 months after she had filed this tenant petition. And 2.5 months later, only on the eve of the hearing, does she determine, well, I would like an attorney, so I need another continuance. She did not comply with the case management order. And while she is, and we are distanced in time, so, you know, perhaps it's understandable that Ms. Isles wouldn't sit here today necessarily being able to identify the names of each document. But I would submit to you that the date of the hearing, the way the parties are in fact notified of the date of the hearing, is that the date of the hearing is contained in the case management order. And therefore, I would submit to you that since she acknowledges that she did in fact get notice of the date of the hearing, then she got the case management order. And it not only says that you should put in your witnesses and exhibits 5 days before the hearing, it says it in bold type. It not only says that you could lose your hearing if you don't show up, but I believe it says that in bold type as well. It also gives specific rules for how you make a motion to continue your hearing. Ms. Isles put in no exhibits and no documents by the 16th of October as required. And this time, the day before the hearing, at 4:47, we are told, at 4:47, she put in a request for a continuance that said, and this is the information from which the judge below had to work with, she has a fairly new job that was when a schedule that was recently set and a last-minute scheduling issue with a colleague. She doesn't say her boss required her to go to work. She doesn't say why she couldn't have timely put in a motion to continue if she'd needed to, because her job is only fairly new and it's only recently set, which suggests that that's something other than this afternoon I learned for the first time. It gives no specifics. It gives no reason why she didn't put in any evidence or witness list. It gives no reason for why she hadn't requested in timely fashion, both for the tribunal and for respondent, a motion to continue. As a result of which, The respondent, because there was no ruling on this request for a continuance, it was filed only 13 minutes before the hearing was the next day, the respondent had to come to court. I had to come to court. We had to prepare to do the hearing. At the time of the hearing, there was no, again, there was no contact from Ms. Isles to try to follow up to see if her motion had been granted or not. And it is my recollection that while we were in the hearing, the judge attempted to call unsuccessfully Ms. Isles. Under the rules of the tribunal, motions to continue should be timely, and I submit to you that they were that the motion complained of here was not timely.
Let me ask you this.
And that there has to state a good cause, and lacking any specifics or any reasons, and I'm sorry, Commissioner, I didn't mean
to talk. No, not at all.
Submit to you that there was no state
understood.
Of good cause.
Understood. Did you, out of curiosity, who filed the Drayton? Was it Drayton done sua sponte, or was it Drayton something she filed a Drayton stay?
The Drayton stay was initiated, as it always is, by her side.
Okay.
I do believe, and again, I don't have an exact recollection. I may have signed a precipice because it was a foregone conclusion that it would be, in fact, it's an administrative matter, and why bother the court for a hearing when you know?
But in other words, she would have known, or at least her counsel would have known, what the nature that filing a Drayton stay means, that you then have to come to this court to the, you know, that the administrative process kicks in. So there was a clear acknowledgement that there was an administrative process at the time the Drayton stay was issued. That's all I'm asking.
That's absolutely clear.
Okay.
In point of fact, as the whole mess about the aftermath of the mistrial, her attorney was still speaking with me and indicated that he was going to be filing a tenant petition, and that there would be a tenant petition and there would be a Drayton stay, and we were informed of all of these things as that's what she and her counsel had decided
The settlement issue, I just wanted to ask you, were there actual negotiations for a settlement at Superior Court, or can you...
I have never experienced anything like what happened at we were in trial for 2 days. The trial then was carrying over. For some reason, perhaps I was discussing with her counsel, I was not in the room, and I may have been out with her attorney trying to work out procedural matters with her evidentiary matters, I don't recall. But when I returned into the courtroom, the judge from the bench informed me that she'd been talking, or that Ms. Isles had been talking, they had been talking. The judge and Ms. Isles had been talking. And the judge indicated to me and said to me, Ms. Isles tells me that all she wants to do is settle this case, and that all she wants is some repairs made to her property, were words to this effect. Again, it was a while ago, and I'm not trying to quote, but indicated to me she had talked to Mrs. Isles. Ms. Isles had said to her she wanted to settle the case. Joan Zeldin, the judge, indicated, well, you know, would you be open to discussing that? And I now, in retrospect, foolishly said, Your Honor, we're always open to, you know, a resolution. Amicable resolutions are better than not. And, of course, and the judge sat there and brokered the deal. What do you need, Ms. Isles? She indicated what she needed. Ms. Blumenthal, would your client be willing to do that? And yes, and whatever those kinds of discussions are. We reached the point where we had a resolution on all those things. I wrote out the settlement precipice per the judge's, okay, the judge says this is what I understand the parties have agreed to. I wrote a settlement precipice. The settlement precipice was given then to the parties to sign. And at that point, Ms. Isles, through her counsel, said, well, we're willing to sign this so long as it doesn't resolve all issues, and we want to reserve our rights to pursue our claims. At that point, the judge And I think everyone in the room was a little nonplussed, and in any event, they would not move off of that position and that. And then the judge said, look, I've now engaged in meaningful settlement discussions between the two of you. I should think she had a few harsh words for counsel's participation in all of this, but then declared the mistrial. And at that point, we had, you know,
thank you,
this petition.
Do you have any questions?
My understanding was it actually was carried to the 20th of May, and then nothing happened on the 20th of May then?
That was correct, because what would happen is the Judge Zeldin needed then to get it assigned to another judge. Another date was set. In the meantime, however, this tenant petition on the 11th of May was filed and a Drayton stay requested. And as I say, that's really an administrative matter for the court, and therefore that would vacate the 20th.
Commissioner?
No questions.
Any more questions?
Just one last question. When the clerk of the commission showed you that document, you recalled at least receiving two of the four pages. You recall seeing it at some point?
Yes, and I know that in my appeal, like, I know for sure that in the denial, I read that document after the denial. So I don't know. Because I didn't know about the 5 days or any of that before.
Okay, you've got 5 minutes if you would like to respond to.
Yes.
Ms. Blumenthal, we understand exactly. Did you want to make a summary statement? You have a couple of minutes.
I believe
left.
The issues are. It's fairly.
Understood. Thank you.
The record speaks for itself.
Speaks for itself. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, first of all, I do apologize. I did not know what this meeting today was for. Obviously, I'm not prepared for this. In that case, or I don't know if that was Superior Court that we were in. I thought Superior Court was the L&T Court across the street. And
is Superior Court.
So that was in a 2-day process. I think the 2-day process was here. And anyway,
in other words, where the landlord sought eviction, that's, and you had a trial already in another court.
Okay.
Not in this building, but in the building over at on Indiana Avenue.
Right.
Okay. That would be Superior Court, landlord tenant. So that's where this other action was.
Okay. The reasons for no evidence, as Judge Zeldin stated, I am a layman and I do not know the court procedures.
Did you have a lawyer?
I had a lawyer who dismissed himself from the case because of the day before he didn't realize that he was, trying more than just one issue. And I said, well, actually, you know, that's what this is. There are two issues. And he said, okay, he'll get back to me. He emailed me or called. No, he did email me and followed up with a phone call or writing that he would not be able to try the case under the terms that he set. So that was, you know, so the counsel that I did have, I don't know that we should just assume, you know, that it was, the counsel dismissed himself. He sent me an email and he said, take this email and they'll understand or they'll, this is, you know, enough to get more time. I did not seek counsel beyond that, or I tried, but I didn't feel comfortable because I don't, you know, it's a matter of trust. Like, you know, this is a huge issue. So I didn't know of the evidence that was required, and especially a 5-day rule. I called last week, and I was told 3 days by the number that I needed to provide proof of of documents or any filings about 3 days, not about 3 days prior. I heard about 5 days from when I actually filed this, and I told the person, no, it's 3 days, at least that's what I was told. I am, again, not an attorney, so I do not know, obviously, you know, all of the documents that are required or the protocol. I know that you do have information on the site that I, you know, can access. I've tried to access it at times, not entirely successfully. As far as the it being the nth hour, as I mentioned, I sent the appeal thinking that my reasoning was enough, not that I needed to provide, again, a letter from an employer at that time. I mentioned that I used a library to a DC public library, and it took quite a bit of time. I think I had at least, as I said, I get off work at about, well, it was actually 3 that I actually left. And by the time I got to the library, it would have been about 4. So it took quite a bit of time just to get the response through. I know that time, you know, flew, and it was almost 5 o'clock. So the debate was, should I drive or should I try to just
now,
email?
Now, if you engaged in settlement discussions below, or you proposed a settlement to the judge, that indicates that you, at least to me, it indicates that you already knew a little bit about your case, and you knew kind of how you might solve the problem that your case raised. And so I have a little trouble trying to figure out, you say you don't know any of these things, and yet you have a lawyer below. You seem to know your way around with your settlement discussions. You seem to ignore what's in writing in front of you. You know some things, you don't know other things. So I'm having a bit of a trouble right now trying to understand why you didn't know all of the things you claim you didn't know.
Because I'm trying to piece the information together. It's easy for me to see what my attorney did, and then just, you know, actually, thank you for that other point. I walked in here to make filings, and apparently the man that was at the desk had assumed that I was an attorney. He asked me, are you in practice for yourself, or are you, you know, yes, I'm as shocked as you are. The reason I bring that up is because when I would ask a question, it was very difficult to get a simple answer. I was told, well, you've been here before. You know what to do. So I don't know what to do. Clearly, I'm here, you know, not knowing what to do. But I can, the settlement that took place, if you look through that court document, I barely spoke. Or when I did, each and every time I spoke, I was cut off. The same for my attorney. I told my attorney the entire time, I don't want settlement. We talked about that at the other place. I do not want settlement. That's not something that I willfully, like, went into. She asked, I think, if you want to resolve the matter. I don't want settlement as I understand settlement to be now, where I'm giving up all of my rights. And I said that, so I should say I told my attorney, I do not want to give up all my rights. Mm-hmm. I said that over and over again. He waited, and he also did try to communicate to Judge Zeldin that the other party knew that I did not want that type of settlement with all my rights taken. They know that. We did that before, and I lost all my rights. So I knew that. I said, well, I don't want this because I know that I've been burned by it. They don't take responsibility for anything, and it falls on me, and it comes back to that.
I have a question for you. You mentioned earlier when you got your contract, I guess 2 weeks prior to the hearing date. I think you said you waited until the day before the hearing to tell your employer.
No. That was actually what I remembered now. The Monday, I did feel like I was.
When did you give notice to your employer that you needed to come here or come to the hearing?
I I wasn't the employer. I was saying it was the
teacher,
the person, yeah, that
okay.
I work with, who something, there are 2 points with that. The Monday before the hearing was a holiday.
Okay.
So had it not been a holiday, I would have come on Monday and said, you know what, this is the situation. I would have done that. The Friday was the day that I found out from the teacher, and Monday was a holiday, and Tuesday was a hearing.
I guess, why
when
didn't
I say holiday
you,
here.
I'm sorry, Richard. Why didn't you request the time off? Why didn't you request the time off earlier from the?
It was a new job. As I went to, I refused a meeting from a senior teacher, and I ended up, you know, my job being threatened. This happened last week. So it's not that, okay, you know, I'm just deciding, you know, I could have my job, like, I could lose it. So I did.
So
not,
if you knew you could lose your job, and you'd already asked for continuances before, as soon as you got your new job, and you got this date being the 18th, and you knew you were going to lose your job, why didn't you just email another request for continuance earlier?
I did. Okay, so I didn't know, and in my document, I know that when I email for requests, I have to give dates. And if I'm always being, you know, if it seems like, from my side, it seems prejudiced towards the party with the attorney, or any attorney.
So what you're saying is the reason why you didn't ask for a continuance earlier once you got your first new job is because you couldn't give them any new dates.
I could not give them dates. I have another document here, I think, that shows that I started to do something like that.
So let me ask
on
you.
April 12th. I don't know that I can do that on April 12th.
No, so what I just want to understand from you is that when you didn't ask, when you made the decision not to ask earlier for a new hearing date because you didn't have any suggested dates, did it cross your mind that if you didn't ask earlier or you didn't do it timely, that your case could be lost?
No, it did not. And when I requested this date, I actually thought I would travel, work overseas, and come back. That plan went. So I do work, like, very, 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 like, and I didn't call back to say, you know what, I'm here, can we just do the trial earlier or whatnot? I still would have been ill-prepared because I thought it was something else. I knew that it would be looked at, or I thought it would be looked at as though I'm changing it again. So I tend to think that when the other party makes a claim, I mean, it seems to be valid. I felt that way during the trial with Judge Zeldin.
But I guess
Zeldin.
I just want to bring you right back
yes.
to some very basic things. In the document that the clerk of the court showed you, it's only 4 pages long, and you teach for a living, correct?
Yes.
All right. Underneath where it says the date in bold and underlined, it says very clearly, please read the important information regarding your hearing that follows. That's on the very, very first page. And I'm having a very difficult time to believe that you would receive a document that gives you the date and then in bold, and I can have it brought back to you. It says very clearly, read all these other pages. I'm having a very difficult time that once you received this back in September, before you signed the contract, that you didn't take a moment, it's only 4 pages, and read all the 4 pages. On the first page, it gives you the date, the location, and the time of the hearing. It tells you the important things. On the second page, which you admitted to the court that you'd read before, it spells out documents and witnesses. That's where the 5 days comes in. On the third page, it talks about subpoenas. On the bottom of the third page, it talks about other issues. And then on the fourth page, it talks about motions to continue. And it says in bold letters, only an administrative law judge can change the scheduled hearing date. If you do not receive an order granting the motion to continue the hearing, you are required to appear at the date and time that appear in the case management order, or you may lose your case. I'm finding it difficult to understand if you received a document that says at the bottom, please read the whole thing, that once you received it, that you did not read it. And based on all of your experiences and based on what you've indicated perhaps you feel the system is going one way or the other, why, once you learned of the date, you would not have read all of the instructions. The instructions are clear that says, essentially, you can ask for what you like, but if you don't hear from the court them granting your request, you're going to likely lose. And I don't understand how you would not have read that.
So there's a chance that I won't. So there's a chance that it's, I think for me, and
you just took a chance.
I definitely took a chance.
And you realized with a chance you could have lost.
Or
and
the other way around.
We find ourselves here today because of that chance.
Sorry?
We find ourselves here now because you took a chance.
I definitely think if it said that you must be present, I would be present.
And if you didn't, you could lose?
No. I mean, if it said that
we
you
have
must
to wrap this up pretty
I'm
soon.
Sorry.
So if you could just give us just your final statement on your what you think to be the important matters you want us to consider, and try to keep it short.
Okay. The important matter I want you to consider is that while you have a process, it's not clear for someone who isn't in this field of work. It's important to read everything. It's important to read the fine print and the bold. I do strongly believe that though it's been made a case that the nature of people's jobs can cause them to need that extra or that last minute, even though it may seem like it's on a continual basis. This is Washington, D.C. Lots of people work on contract that are more on terms that are more set. While, as I said, not well prepared for this case where I don't have the dates in front of me, I know that when I decided not to go, I tried my best to get some communication through and in a timely manner. It did not work out as I would have liked. I know that the other option is to negotiate with the other party. That has never worked. Just as a case can be made that I always continued, a case could be made that any request has always been denied, and we wouldn't be sitting here as well had we been able to come to the table and say, you know what, can we both meet at this time or meet at that time, whether for the repairs to my unit or for a new date. When they have requested new dates in the Judge Selden's case, I was happy to comply. I was very happy to comply. I can't get the same thing. So I do need to just rely on the court understanding. That's why I'm here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I think we understand your position. You've explained it very well. Ms. Blumenthal, thank you. Well, that brings, it's now 11:55, and we will take under advisement all of the evidence and all the argument presented, and we will issue a decision in this case in 30 to 45 days. And thank you very much for participating, and this case is now adjourned.
Thank you, Commissioner.